It still seemed to be early, and the morning freshness was in the air. They kept on stopping to look round and look behind them, partly because it was so beautiful, but partly also because there was something about it which they couldn't understand.
Peter, where is this, do you suppose?
I don't know. It reminds me of somewhere, but I can't give it a name. Could it be somewhere we once stayed for a holiday when we were very, very small?
It would have to have been a jolly good holiday. I bet there isn't a country like this anywhere in our world. Look at the colours. You couldn't get a blue like the blue on those mountains in our world. Mm.
Is it not Aslan's country?
Not like Aslan's country on top of that mountain beyond the eastern end of the world. I've been there.
We've been there.
If you ask me, it's like somewhere in the Narnian world. Look at those mountains ahead and the big ice mountains beyond them. Surely they're rather like the mountains we used to see from Narnia, the ones up westward beyond the waterfall.
Yes, so they are. Only these are bigger.
Yeah.
I don't think those mountains are so very like anything in Narnia, but look there, those hills southward, the nice woody ones and the blue ones behind. Mm. Aren't they very like the southern border of Narnia?
Like? Yes. Why, they're exactly like. Look, there's Mount Pyle with its forked head and there's the pass into Arkenland and everything.
And yet they're not like them. They're different. They have more colours on them, and they look further away than I remembered. Mm. And they're more, I don't know.
More like the real thing.
Mm. Ah! Kings and queens!
What is it, Farsight?
We have all been blind. We are only beginning to see where we are. From up there in the sky, I've seen it all. Ettin's Moor, Beaver's Dam, the Great River, and Caer Paravel still shining on the edge of the eastern sea. Narnia is not dead. This is Narnia.
But how can it be? For Aslan told us older ones that we should never return to Narnia. And here we are.
Yes, and we saw it destroyed and the sun put out. And it's all so different.
The eagle is right. Listen, Peter. When Aslan said you could never go back to Narnia, he meant the Narnia you were thinking of. But that was not the real Narnia. That had a beginning and an end. It was only a shadow or a copy of the real Narnia, which has always been here and always will be here. Just as our world, England and all, is only a shadow or a copy of something in Aslan's real world. So you need not mourn over Narnia, Lucy. Yeah. All of the old Narnia that mattered, all the dear creatures, have been drawn into the real Narnia through the door. And of course it is different. As different as a real thing is from a shadow, or a waking life is from a dream. It's all in Plato. Let me, what do they teach them at these schools?
Forgive me, but I'm still not certain that I understand.
Think about it like this. You may have been in a room in which there was a window that looked out over a lovely bay of the sea, mm-hmm. or a green valley that wound away among mountains. Mm-hmm. And in the wall of that room, opposite to the window, there may have been a looking glass. Mm-hmm. And as you turned away from the window, you suddenly caught sight of that sea or that valley all over again in the looking glass. Mm-hmm. And the sea in the mirror, or the valley in the mirror, were in one sense just the same as the real ones. Yet, at the same time, they were somehow different. Deeper, more wonderful, more like places in a story. In a story you've never heard, but very much want to know. The difference between the old Narnia and the new Narnia is like that. The new one is a deeper country. Every rock and flower and blade of grass looks as if it means more. And, oh, I'm sorry, I can't describe it any better than that.
I have come home at last. This is my real country. I belong here. This is the land I've been looking for all my life, though I never knew it till now. The reason why we love the old Narnia is that it sometimes looked a little like this. Mm. Now, may we stop talking and start moving again. Come further up. Come further in.
He shook his mane and sprang forward into a great gallop. a unicorn's gallop, which in our world would have carried him out of sight in a few moments. But now, a most strange thing happened. Everyone else began to run, and they found to their astonishment that they could keep up with him. Not only the dogs and the humans, but even fat little Puzzle and short-legged Poggin the dwarf. The air flew in their faces as if they were driving fast in a car without a windshield. The country flew past as if they were seeing it from the windows of an express train. Faster and faster they raced, but no one got hot or tired or out of breath.
Oh, I say, steady! Look what we're coming to.
It's the cauldron pool and the great waterfall. Don't stop! Further up and further in!
Oh, well, it's all very well for him. He's flying.
Take it in your stride. Further up and further in.
Jewel's voice could only just be heard above the roar of the water. But next moment, everyone saw that he had plunged into the pool and helter-skelter behind him with splash after splash. All the others did the same. The water was not biting cold, as they expected, but of a delicious, foamy coolness. They all found they were swimming straight for the waterfall itself.
This is absolutely crazy.
I know! And yet...
Isn't it wonderful? Yes. Have you noticed? One can't feel afraid, even if one wants to.
That's right.
Jewel reached the foot of the waterfall first, but Tyrion was only just behind him. Jewel was last, so she could see the whole thing better than the others. Jewel went up the waterfall. You couldn't tell whether he was swimming or climbing, but he moved on, higher and higher. Behind him came King Tyrion. He moved his arms and legs as if he was swimming, but he moved straight upwards, as if one could swim up the wall of a house. But before Jill knew it, she was going up the waterfall herself. It was the sort of thing that would have been quite impossible in our world, but in that world, you could do it. And then at last, she came to the lovely, smooth, green curve in which the water poured over the top and found she was out on the level river above the waterfall. The current raced away behind her. Soon, they were all on the bank, dripping but happy.
Further up and further in.
We're out of Narnia now, and up into the Western Wild.
I've never been this far before. Have any of you?
I haven't.
Nor have I.
Ah. Do you remember, Polly?
Yes, I remember.
Is it true, then, as the stories tell, that you two journeyed here on the very day the world was made?
Yes. And it seems to me as if it were only yesterday.
And on a flying horse. Is that part true?
Certainly.
Ho, ho! Don't stop now! Faster! Faster! Ho, ho!
So they ran faster and faster till it was more like flying than running. And even the eagle overhead was going no faster than they. And they went through winding valley after winding valley and up the steep sides of hills and faster than ever down the other side, following the river and sometimes crossing it and skimming across mountain lakes as if they were in speedboats. Till at last, at the far end of one long lake, they saw a smooth green hill. Its sides were as steep as the sides of a pyramid, and round the very top of it ran a green wall. But above the wall rose the branches of trees whose leaves looked like silver and their fruit like gold.
Further up and further in!
They charged straight at the foot of the hill and then found themselves running up it. Though the slope was very steep, no one slipped. Only when they'd reached the very top did they slow up. That was because they found themselves facing great golden gates.
Oh, should we open them?
Dare we? Is it all right?
But while they were standing thus, a great horn, wonderfully loud and sweet,
blew from somewhere inside that walled garden, and the gates swung open. Tyrion stood holding his breath and wondering who would come out. And what came was the last thing he'd expected. A little sleek, bright-eyed, talking mouse with a red feather stuck in a circlet on its head and its left paw resting on a long sword. It bowed, a most beautiful bow, and said,
"Welcome in the lion's name. Come further up and further in."
Oh, how are you, Reepy?
Good old Reepy Chief.
Oh,
what a wonderful surprise.
It's so good to see you again.
Tyrion breathed fast with the sheer wonder of it. For now he knew he was looking at one of the great heroes of Narnia, Reepy Chief, the mouse, who'd fought the great battle of Beruna and afterwards sailed to the world's end with King Caspian the Seafarer. But before he'd had much time to think of this, he felt two strong arms thrown about him and felt a bearded kiss on his cheeks and heard a well-remembered voice saying,
"What lad! Art thicker and taller since I last touched thee."
It was his own father.
Fire.
The good King earlier. But not as Tyrion had seen him last, when they brought him home, pale and wounded, from his fight with the giant, nor even as Tyrion remembered him in his later years, when he was a grey-headed warrior. This was his father, young and merry, as he could just remember him from very early days, when he himself had been a little boy. Jewel thought to himself that he would leave the two to talk for a little while, and then go greet the good King Erlian. But next moment he had something else to think about. For out of the gateway there came a horse so mighty and noble that even a unicorn might feel shy in its presence. A great winged horse.
Fledge! Fledge!
Good old Fledge!
Greetings, cousins! Greetings!
Oh.